Pittsburgh Steeler fans, welcome back to another episode of Steeler Stat Geek. This is Behind the Steel Curtain, co-editor Dave Schofield coming at you again. It's Thursday morning. It's been a different week for me, a little bit strange, but I'm happy to be here with you talking some geeky numbers and things of that nature. Yeah, the reason it's been a different week for me is I actually have not appeared on a YouTube podcast in almost a week until I am actually recording this right now on Wednesday night just before I'm getting ready to go on live with Jeffrey Benedict on the Curtain Call. And it's been over a week since I've done a YouTube podcast because I was not on the Steelers preview last Thursday after I came to you all on Thursday morning because it was my son's birthday. I was actually with Big Bro Sco out on his fishing boat with my son. That's what he got to do for his birthday. And if you don't know who I'm talking about when I say Big Bro Sco, you're missing out because you're not. That means you haven't caught the Sco Bro Show. Hopefully that's something that you've caught before. I really enjoy doing that with my brother on Tuesday evenings. But this past week, we had a switch up this week. It was kind of fun where Michael Beck was filling in for me on the Sco Bro Show Tuesday night. I just spent a couple days away with the family. Went to a nice little indoor water park, Great Wolf Lodge. Hit up the one in Williamsburg, Virginia. It was pretty nice. Spent 2 days doing that. And therefore, because I was traveling, Michael Beck covered for me on Tuesday night. If you haven't checked out the Sco Bro Show from this Tuesday, make sure you do that. Also, that therefore, because... happy birthday to you, Michael Beck. We are 1 day removed from it now, but on Wednesday, Michael Beck hit a quarter of a century. Yeah, he's just a young guy up there from the Great White North. So, man, he's young, he's Canadian, he's West Coast. Michael Beck, he's a whole different bird from somebody like me. And, well, I can't say Jeff Hartman because Jeff's younger than me as well. But we've got a whole family of podcasters. If you don't know who I'm talking about, you are missing out. If you've stumbled on this podcast for the first time and you do not know the entire BTSC family of podcasts, my goodness, I tell you what, I can't keep up with them all. There is so much content, I can't listen to all of it every week. And you know what? That's our goal. You should not be lacking in your Steelers content. That if you're someone who likes to listen to podcasts, I mean, if you have a 3-hour commute each way every day, I'm sorry, I don't know that we could cover you there. That's not me. I have about a 3-second commute from my bedroom to my kitchen. It seems like, or my dining room table where I sit and do my BTSC work. But I do my best to try to keep up on all these podcasts. I know last weekend I got to catch the retro show for the first time in a long time. My goodness, that show, the way they're doing that now, fantastic. Love the setup. Tony DeFeo is too legit to quit. If you caught that episode, you know what I'm talking about. So make sure you are checking out all our podcasts. And like I say, the ones that, if you can catch out a live show on YouTube or Facebook in the evenings, that's great. If not, they're still there in two parts on the audio platform. Make sure you check out everything with Behind the Steel Curtain, especially the website, behindthesteelcurtain.com. We do everything that we can to be your one-stop shop for all things Pittsburgh Steelers. So I'm coming at you tonight. I kind of had a little bit of a change up. I was going to do one question that was actually sent indirectly to me, but it was advised to me, you know, maybe save that one. Do this week. I actually am answering a specific question from one Jefferson Hartman in the first half. I do have another question from an email that I'll be doing in the second part of the show. But what Jeff wanted to know is this is all about, it's this time of year we're going to be looking at where some players are looking to maybe get extensions. This is when the contract extensions happened. You generally happen for the Steelers. After training camp, not training camp, after OTAs, which we're not quite done OTAs. We still got mandatory mini camp next week. But after that, coming up in these few weeks, you could be hearing news of maybe some players with a contract extension. This could go all the way up till the start of the season. And it could even be very last minute this year. It could be late because, remember, there's Steelers play the Hall of Fame game. Then they have 3 preseason games, week 1, 2, and 3. There is no week 4 of the preseason. Roster cutdowns are on August 31st, and the Steelers don't play until September 12th. So you have almost 2 weeks after that where there's still some things that can be done on that side of everything. Now, just to remind you all, there's certain things when it comes to contracts that the Steelers do and the Steelers don't do. The Steelers do not negotiate contracts during the season. The reason that happens is because it's created problems in the past. I wish I could get more specific with the players, but it's definitely before my time with BTSC. I'm pretty sure it was either early in the Kevin Colbert era or pre-Kevin Colbert. I'm pretty sure it's pre-Kevin Colbert, if I remember right. Because I'm thinking it was in the 90s. I feel bad. I wasn't even planning on sharing the story. That's why I don't have all the information for you. But what it was is there was players looking to get contract extensions. It was during the season. One player got it. A couple other players didn't. There was some animosity, some locker room problems, and the Steelers had a real strong season going, and things just kind of fell off at the end because of team chemistry and things like that. So they just made it a policy that they aren't going to negotiate contracts during the season. I wish I knew the year again because I wasn't planning on going into this, but there was still the story of Troy Polamalu signing his new contract to then get on the plane to travel for the Steelers week 1 game. That's just kind of how they work. So that's one thing to remember. Another thing to remember is that the Steelers, now this is something that I'm going to then explain a little bit about. The Steelers don't extend players with more than 1 year remaining on their contract, with the exception of quarterbacks. Okay. They have that quarterback exception, but that's the way they've done it. That's the way they worked it. I could see them changing that this year, of making a different exception because there is a situation that would call for it. And it's the one situation that I've talked about a lot. A restructure of Stephon Tuitt is not easy right now because he's under the old CBA. I mean, it can be done, but as I say, you're not just kicking the can down the road. You're causing the can to get bigger. It's one thing if you're trading off dollar for dollar against the salary cap from 1 year to the next. They would have to pay Stephon Tuitt more because of this 17th game addition, that the league is paying part of that based on your base salary. If he changes his base salary, it'll change that amount. All these things. I've described this several times in articles at BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. So you've got the whole thing like that I could say them saying, hey, because of this circumstance and a new CBA that governs our stuff, maybe we should go ahead and say, let's do an extension just to get you under the new CBA. They could do it. It would be a really big deal if they did it, but that goes against their general rules. But if you're talking about players that are going to be looking for a contract extension, some people might instantly think, oh, well, what about Minka Fitzpatrick? Well, technically, since the Steelers picked up his fifth-year option, he's under contract for 2 more years. I don't know that that's an exception to the rule. It could be. I'm not looking for it. I'm looking more for that in the next year. Now, someone like Terrell Edmunds, who they did not pick up his option, that's someone who could be getting an extension this offseason. But going from a rookie deal to a second deal generally doesn't help much with the salary cap unless they set it up that way, it might not be the most beneficial thing. The big one, this is the topic of the show, all that I did all this setup is because we wanted to talk about TJ Watt. Is it better for the Steelers to extend TJ Watt now, or is it better for them to extend him in 2022? And honestly, there are some pros and cons to this in general. Now, because TJ Watt is under contract, he's playing the fifth-year option for the Steelers this year. He has a guaranteed salary. It was locked in, what was it, right after the beginning of the league year. I mean, they could have. It wasn't guaranteed then, just because he was under the old CBA. New CBA stuff, that fit like Minka. When the Steelers pick up that fifth-year option for Minka Fitzpatrick, boom, it's guaranteed. Before year, both year 4 and year 5 automatically become guaranteed. That wasn't it with TJ Watt, but the time has passed. There was no way they were going to do anything crazy with TJ Watt. He is locked in. with a base salary of this year of $10.089 million. So we could say 10.1 if we wanted to. But that's the exact figure. That is his exact salary. That is his exact cap number. And there's nothing going on there that could save anything with the exception of an extension. So what kind of money are we talking about for TJ Watt? My goodness. Here's what I did. I went back and I looked at the six highest paid edge rushers at this time. And the reason that I went six is because all of those signed contracts at the time of $100 million or more. They all had a yearly average of $19 million or more. I mean, and only one of them was under 20. Now, as we go through these, we'll see that this might be, some of them might have a better indication for TJ Watt. Some of them might not. But a lot of this also has to do with how the Steelers do their contracts. They don't do a bunch of crazy stuff. They pretty much do it straightforward. When the Steelers do a contract, you are looking at, I would say, three things. Okay? You're looking at base salary, signing bonus, roster bonus. That's pretty much what they do. The Steelers don't do much with like a workout bonus or a per game bonus or things like that. This is their general structure that you can see from Steelers salaries. And now when a player signs a new deal, most of the time, not always, but most of the time, their base salary is for the league minimum or not much more. For example, Cam Hayward last year with his new deal, his base salary was $1.5 million, where the league minimum was right around $1 million. So it was a little bit more. But you don't get that big elevated salary right off the bat. It's usually league minimum or not much more, and then the big signing bonus, which then salary cap wise gets spread out over the next 5 years. Even if it's an 8-year contract, you're talking the next 5 years. Now, the Steelers have done some things this year that they've never done before, like used void years in contracts. They did it with Ben Roethlisberger. They did it with Cam Sutton. They did it with Juju Smith-Schuster. You know, things that they added void years to Eric Ebron, things like that. Those are some things that they could do. But generally, what the Steelers are doing is this kind of contract. Now, I already talked a little bit about this thing with TJ Watt in an article that I did that was about how the Steelers have options to save money under the cap, but they're not great. I talked about how they could extend some of their veterans. The reason they're not great is offering an extension. You know, how long of an extension do you want to offer a player who's 32 years old? If you're talking someone like Joe Hayden or David DeCastro or things like that. Then I talked about the restructuring. The only guys that could restructure are Tuitt and Boswell, who are the two guys under the old system, under the old CBA. Every player that had a contract under the new CBA who had years where they could restructure, the Steelers already did it. They did it. So to say that, oh, that old CBA talking, that doesn't mean anything. Well, then how come all the players on the new CBA, they restructured, but all the players on the old CBA, with the exception of Ben Roethlisberger, because he got a new deal where he took a pay cut. So that changed that. That made that all different. Everyone else was old CBA, and they haven't done it. So they're kind of, I'm looking at that they're saving that as a last resort for when they really need it and not doing it until then. So, and then my third thing was about a new deal for TJ Watt. And the reason I'm saying this might not be the best thing for saving cap space is because of how much of a signing bonus is Watt looking for. Because the number you want to think of right off the bat is if TJ Watt plays this year for the league minimum, which is just under $1 million. So we'll round it to $1 million for someone with his years of experience, because it's 990K is what it really is. And you'll round that off. If you want to look at how much of a signing bonus he could get and the Steelers not have to spend more on the salary cap, you're talking $45 million. Okay. Because $45 million divided up over 5 years, that would be $9 million a year. So that would put TJ Watt this year at $10 million towards the salary cap. He's currently at 10.1. I think you figured that out. So the question is, would the Steelers want to be giving TJ Watt a bigger signing bonus? Or is not how they would structure the contract, because the only way they could save money for this year would be to have a signing bonus less than that. For every $5 million less that signing bonus is, it would save $1 million against the salary cap, assuming you're talking about that base salary. So a $35 million signing bonus for TJ Watt and in the minimum base salary, I mean, that would pay him, $36 million this year. But at the same time, that would save the Steelers $2 million under the cap. So it would, but it wouldn't. You also got to remember, what kind of numbers are the Steelers usually giving in a signing bonus? For example, Ben Roethlisberger, when he signed his extension in 2000, and I'm pretty sure 19, when he did that one, not his last deal, but the one before, he had a $37.5 million guarantee because it was all signing bonus. That's pretty much how the Steelers guarantee contracts, is by their bonuses. So it's not that they can't guarantee other years and other things of that nature, but that's the biggest guarantee you get, is that big signing bonus up front. So if I'm looking at the top six edge rushers in the NFL, meaning payment-wise, you're talking Joey Bosa, Myles Garrett, Khalil Mack, DeMarcus Lawrence, Frank Clark, and Von Miller. All those guys signed a contract for more than $100 million. So that order that I gave you wasn't the size of their contract, but that was the order that they were in there. If you take the size of their contract divided by the number of years, how many years they had. For example, you've got Joey Bosa. He signed a 6-year deal. It was basically an extension, because I think they had done the fifth year option, but then gave him a new deal before it happened, things like that. I'm not sure if they did the option or not, but it would have been during his fifth year is what I'm saying. So when they did that, he got $135 million over the life of the contract is what he's due. He signed it in 2020. That was an average of $27 million a year. It was a 6-year deal, and he got a $35 million bonus to start. So that's what they did. So the way it worked for Bosa was he counted $15 million towards the salary cap his first year of his contract. Remember, first year of that contract is what we're looking at for TJ Watt to see what the Steelers can work with in 2021. So, but the reason they did that is because they gave him a $1 million base salary, but they gave him a $7 million roster bonus. So that was an extra $7 million that wasn't spread out over those other years. And that's why it was a $15 million cap hit. They guaranteed his contract for the first 3 years. So he's guaranteed through next season of all these things. But he had the $15 million cap hit. Then it jumped up. It's $20.75 million this year. Then you've got big jumps of 28, 31, 29. The last one's not as much because the prorated bonus didn't get that far. That one actually looks more like similar what I could see something with TJ Watt. Except I don't know that the Steelers would want to do that big roster bonus because that would bump his cap up so much, and they don't have the cap room for that right now. If you look at Myles Garrett, Myles Garrett's is different because he actually got his deal before his fourth year of his rookie deal. So they signed his with 1 year left before they even had to do a fifth year option. So his started in 2020. It was for 7 years, and he got $125 million, which comes to $25 million a year. That's 5 years. But they have it all listed out here. Boy, that's different because they said he signed a 5-year, $125 million contract extension. Oh, because it was on top of the 2 years he already had. That's why it's for 7 years from now that he's signed through. Sorry, I got my numbers messed up for a second. I'm like, that doesn't make sense. It was 5 years on top of the 2 years he had left. So that's why his numbers are a little bit different. He signed through 2026. He got a $21 million signing bonus, but he also had these other bonuses that were kicking in, like the first and second day of the league year, but they kick in as a different type of bonus where it does get prorated. I mean, there's a lot of strange language just in the notes of his contract that I don't see the Pittsburgh Steelers doing stuff that way. Now, Granted, Myles Garrett, his salary cap number for his first year of this contract. Remember, it was extension of 5 years beyond the two he was already under contract. So that first year cap number, what do you know? It was 10.1, which is what TJ Watt is this year. But mainly because of the prorated bonus that he got it now for that extension. Some of it didn't kick in until the second year of where he was extending of bonuses. He'll get there. It's a lot of stuff. So it's not, we can look at how much he makes a year, but it doesn't give us a much of a good indication of what's going on with TJ Watt. So then you go to Khalil Mack. The thing that was interesting with Khalil Mack is he signed his back in 2018. This was what he did when he came to the Bears. He signed a 6-year extension, which was beyond what he was already under contract for. In essence, it was for when this kicked in, it was for 7 years plus one. And the reason I'm saying plus one is he's got a void year thrown on at the end to help with that prorated bonus. So he had bonuses kicking in at the time of the contract, bonuses kicking in when the new one started, a bunch of different things like that. But his was $141 million, but that averaged out to $23.5 million per season. And it was a $34 million signing bonus is what he got. So that's starting to tell you more about what the signing bonuses are that players were getting. That was just below Joey Bosa's 35. DeMarcus Lawrence for the Cowboys, which is funny, he's up there in pay, but I don't think of him as being in the same category as some of these other guys, but that's just me. He signed his 5-year deal in 2019. So that's when he signed. So he's got a void year tacked on at the end. He had a 5-year deal plus a void year tacked on at the end. He got a $25 million signing bonus, and he counted 11.1 towards the salary cap his first year. But once again, they used the base salary. They had the prorated bonus, but then he had a roster bonus of what he had his first year. Now, there's something else you can do with that roster bonus that I'll explain here a little bit when I compare TJ back to some Steelers. So that was DeMarcus Lawrence. The next one was really interesting in Frank Clark, but this one's different because he was traded from the Seahawks to the Chiefs. He technically signed a 5-year, $104 million contract that comes to $20.8 million a year. It was he got a lot of fully guarantees. 19 of that was from the signing bonus, and because of everything he had some workout bonuses and other bonuses, but they weren't very big. The Chiefs did it kind of like the Steelers. His cap number was only $6.5 million because he had that cheap base salary, and then he had his prorated bonus that he was getting along with that. So then he had another bonus for 2020 that this is all coming from overthecap.com, just so you know, that kicked in that would end up being a prorated bonus that was added on top of that as well. So they did a good job of keeping his cap number very low the first year because they were fighting for it. So as you can see, it can be done. It can be done if that's what you need to do. But let's go ahead and round it out here with Von Miller. He had a $114 million contract for his was for 6 years. And so it was 19.08333333 repeating per year, signed in 2016. So that he's coming up towards the end of it. He's only got this year left of the end of the Von Miller deal. But back then, with his bonus and base salary and everything, he had a salary cap hit his first year of $11.5 million before it jumped up. So the thing that you need to remember with these contracts for these edge rushers is that it's really moving along to where you have a small number and then it jumps. But some of them didn't keep that number that small because they did it in a different type of bonus to where it was still the same number, but it didn't want it to jump too much. What would the Steelers want to do with TJ Watt? They're probably going to want to keep that low this year if they would do it now. So, for example, if you look at Cam Hayward's deal last year, I already said he got the $1.5 million base salary. He had his signing bonus. It was $17.5 million. And he also had a $2.75 million roster bonus. But the way Over the Cap explains that, the roster bonus was treated as a signing bonus since the contract was executed after what would have been the last preseason game. Therefore, it just got rolled in as a signing bonus and spread out based on when that contract is. So you could see that there's also timing issues here that you can do one of those things to help spread out that money if that's what the Steelers are ultimately trying to do with TJ Watt. Now, you're saying, well, you don't want to let him go. You can't let TJ Watt get away. No, you can't let TJ Watt get away. But the Steelers have options next year. They have this, they could, if don't panic if TJ Watt does not sign a deal before the beginning of this year, this coming regular season, because they will use the franchise tag in order to hold on to him. I don't think they want to use it to try to keep from having to pay him as much. I think they want to use it to have more time to negotiate the deal. It might, next year, the Steelers would have more room where they could give him either a larger base salary or what they normally do, have that larger roster bonus for him that would then not make the cap, you know, the cap jump up so much every year after that. That is the option that they would have next year. So bottom line is, when it comes to doing it in 2021 versus 2022, and I know this first part has gone really, really long. We're going to have a short second part of the show, is that how much of it do they want to do as a huge signing bonus that's spread out evenly, where you have a small first year and then a big jump? Or do they want to do not as much of a signing bonus and do it as a roster, some of it as a roster bonus that first year, so it's a little bit more even year to year? That's going to be the difference between this year and next year. It could get done this year, but you're going to see bigger jumps in the years to come of TJ Watt's cap number. But he's the best defensive player in the NFL. He's going to be worth every penny. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to look at the other outside linebacker position this year and answer the question back. So stick around.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Welcome back, Pittsburgh Steelers fans, the Steelers Stat Geek. Man, there was a lot of numbers to talk about. I did a lot of setup that I wasn't planning on doing to talk about contracts to have a little bit better understanding. But wow, the Steelers have options when it comes to TJ Watt. They really just need to decide how they want to structure this contract with how much they want to pay him. Do you want to give the bigger signing bonus or spread it out to a roster bonus to where it's not as much? You've got to really work on that $10 million salary cap number right now. They can't really go above that for this year, just because of other things they need to do. It's possible. It all comes down to how they want to play it. But here was the other question that I have. This was coming from Dave McLaughlin. Sent me an email. My email is stlrsuperfandad@gmail.com. You can send the questions there or just stlrsuperfandad for Twitter. You can hit me up there. He wanted to know, he said that he believes Alex Highsmith had an amazing rookie year and is set to be more than an adequate starting outside linebacker. And even mentioned how it could be, he could have been a first round draft pick in a redraft perhaps. Okay. He wants to know how this can be backed up statistically. He wanted to compare Alex Highsmith's production to Bud Dupree, and wanted to look maybe at Bud Dupree as a rookie, is a way to do this. So that's the way I was looking at this, is to kind of compare Highsmith to Dupree. And it's kind of a little bit difficult. I covered this a little bit with a Vertex probably 6 weeks ago with Jeffrey Benedict. And it was, remember, Dupree only had 11 games in 2020. In those 11 games, he had 8 sacks. You know, he had 2 passes defensed. He had 31 tackles. He had 15 quarterback hits, you know, which is some pretty good stuff. He technically blitzed 81 times, according to Pro Football Reference. He had 12 hurries, 7 quarterback knockdowns, 28 pressures to go with all of those. That was his statistics. But when you look at Alex Highsmith, remember, he played all 16 games, but he only started 5 of them, the last 5. Now, this is regular season. This isn't counting the playoffs, where Highsmith had 2 sacks and 48 tackles for the year, 6 quarterback hits. If you really want to look at it, he was blitzed 36 times, 6 hurries, 4 quarterback knockdowns, 2 sacks, 12 pressures. It was interesting that Highsmith only had a 4.0% missed tackles rate, where Dupree had 6.1. So that was pretty interesting. Highsmith also, he did more in pass coverage. He was targeted 9 times, 5 completions. That's 5.56%. But he had that interception as well. Where Dupree, he was only targeted 3 times, gave up 2 completions. So Highsmith was used a little bit more in the passing game. But what's even more interesting of a comparison of the two is their rookie seasons. Okay. So what it was, I'm looking back right now at this Vertex. Both of them, their rookie years, really had some stuff that lined up. So this was 2015 for Bud Dupree and 2020 for Alex Highsmith. Both appeared in all 16 games. Both started 5 games. Now, Dupree played more snaps. He played 563 his rookie year to Highsmith's 437. Highsmith had more tackles his rookie year, 48 versus 26 versus Dupree. Dupree had twice as many sacks. He had 4 sacks as a rookie, where Highsmith only had 2. Okay. Their quarterback hits, tackles for loss, all these things were almost complete. I mean, they were basically identical. And they both had a pass defensed. Okay. And Highsmith had the interception. So when you want to look at their rookie numbers, there's a lot to see there. Highsmith was in on more tackles, but he didn't have as many sacks. I can't tell you the advanced statistics that I did with like knockdown, sacks, pressures, whatnot, because those at Pro Football Reference only go back to 2018, and we were talking 2015. But they had extremely similar rookie seasons with the number of starts and everything. So if you also want to, the biggest thing with Dupree is he was promising as a rookie, but then his second year is when it was like, what kind of happened here? And that was because he only appeared in 7 games his rookie year. His second year. So then you kind of had that fall off, and then you had to have him coming back from injury, things like that. So Alex Highsmith, it'll be really interesting to compare what he does this year, because I still don't know that you would look for what maybe Bud Dupree was in 2019, but maybe even, you know, closer to that than what Dupree gave in like his second year. So that's some of the numbers to back up what was going on with Highsmith, to show that he and Bud Dupree as rookies were extremely similar, almost identical with their statistics. So if you're like, oh no, you lost Dupree, the biggest thing you lost with Bud Dupree is experience. Okay. They're not the same player. Dupree is better against the run, but Highsmith is better in coverage. So they both have different strengths, but when you talk about their level of play, I don't know that there's going to be a huge drop off there. So I've already run over with the time here. It's been a lot of fun going through all these numbers. My goodness, I always have wondered, do I have enough numbers for a full show? I didn't even have a chance to do all my numbers. And that's why I like Stat Geek stuff so much, that it's such a good time to just talk about these things with you. As I've said before, make sure if you have a question, please reach out to me on Twitter or email. That's STLRSuperFanDad for Twitter, at Gmail for the email. And ask a question, ask away. I'm always looking for stuff. And make sure you are checking out all the podcasts. Like I say, it's almost impossible to catch everything because we try to give you that much. But I want to thank Jeff Hartman for giving me his question. Hey, when the leader of the Ride or Die crew asks a question that he wants to hear on Stat Geek, you got to come through for him. And then once again, I also want to thank Dave McLaughlin for his email question as well. So there you have it. Thanks for joining me. And as I always say, thanks for geeking out with me.